It's time for Dishing Up Nutrition with licensed nutritionist Darlene Kvist. Each week, Darlene explains the connection between what you eat and how you feel. Stay tuned to hear practical, real-life solutions for healthier living through good nutrition. Dishing Up Nutrition is brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones. Looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Well, welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition, brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness, a company specializing in life-changing nutrition education. With school starting this week, I thought it would be a perfect time to discuss the role that nutrition plays in the management of attention deficit disorder, often called ADD. So what exactly is ADD? Children and adults with ADD are easily distracted. They're restless, impulsive, and unable to stick to a task. They may appear kind of absent-minded, reckless, and hard to manage. Include the hyperactive behavior, and it's called ADHD. These individuals are often hyperactive and even a little hyperexcitable. So what does nutrition have to do with attention deficit disorder? Well, we think a lot. Our co-host is Anna Durhock, and Anna has her master's degree in nutrition, and she's a licensed nutritionist, and that's great. She's also the mother of two wonderful little girls, and that's also great. So she knows a lot about nutrition research, you know, many, many years of nutrition research. But she also knows about real-life side of nutrition, you know, feeding a family of four on a budget. Yes. You know that one, don't you?
Yes, very well.
So welcome to the show. And, you know, Anna, as you were researching this topic, what kind of nutritional insights did you discover?
Well, it was kind of scary, but thanks for letting me be on, Dart. At least
we will love it.
I found that at least 5% of the population has an attention deficit disorder, which is about 2 million children. And they're prescribed an amphetamine-like, okay, I said an amphetamine-like type of substance to control their behavior. But there are many nutritional insights that, you know, can help with the behavior and especially attention deficit problems. We wanted to discuss some of the huge ones, which would be sugar, gluten, lack of omega-3 fats, POP, and trans fats. So if your child is struggling today with any of these attention behaviors, you will want to stay tuned. We have actually a very excited guest, Dr. Jay Lombard, to join us in this discussion.
So Dr. Jay Lombard is in private practice as a neurologist, and he uses both traditional and functional medicine approaches as he works with clients. He's also an assistant clinical professor of neurology at Cornell Medical School. And Dr. Lombard will be in town on September 25th to share his insights on autism and ADHD. But today we have him here by phone. So if you want to pick his brain this morning, now is the time to call. And our number here this morning is 651-641-1071. And I hope Dr. Lombard is on the line. Welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. He's not there yet. Oh, he's not there yet. So maybe give him a call and see if you can get a hold of him, you know. So as long as we'll kind of wait for him. And so let's skip to a little things that we know about
yes.
ADD. So as we wait for him.
Well, I know, Dar, when I was doing research and reading on ADD, a deficiency of fatty acids in the brain is probably one of the most prevalent problems that we see in children coming into our office.
So you said omega-3 fatty acids
yes.
were the most prevalent deficiency.
Yep. And I think not only omega-3s, but also omega-6 fatty acids. That's what I found in the research. And most of our listeners probably already know that our brain is 60 to 70% fat. And most of that fat is omega-3 fatty acids.
And I think, and I'm not sure, but I think, because we know this as nutritionists, that as you look at breast milk, because that's why we recommend people, you know, breastfeeding if possible, because, you know, guess what? It's 30% fat, and most of that fat is omega-3 DHA fat.
Yep.
And also now that some of the formula makers are starting to put DHA actually in the formula.
Right.
So we know that omega-3 is really important for brain function.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's kind of interesting. There was some new research also this week that popped out, I think, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but there was a study of all the other studies that have been done, and they've discovered that, lo and behold, saturated fat is not bad, that actually it's okay, and it doesn't cause heart disease and all those other things that we thought in the past, or some people thought. We have never thought that, but
right.
some people thought that. And now that they really did find out that it is actually
very good for you.
Yeah, it's good for you. And actually, it's the trans fats that is the bad things.
Right.
But I bring that up because, you know, omega-3 fats like fish oil and the DHA, they come from organic eggs and all those
right.
places. And those are really good. And then there's an interesting another fat that's called arachidonic acid,
uh-huh.
isn't it?
Yep.
And when we read research, I mean, you've read about that a million times, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
And when you read about this research, you think, oh, this is going to be bad. But actually, children need that, don't
yeah.
they?
Yep. And what I found is the EPA is almost just as important, if not more important, than the DHA for the brain because of the structure that it has, the structural component it has in the brain. And I thought that was flooring to me.
Yes.
Because we hear all about DHA, but EPA is more for the rest of the body.
Right.
So
some of those, besides breast milk, some of those foods that like salmon
and sardines,
and cod liver oil, like our grandmothers used to give everybody.
Yep.
So those are all really healthy, good fats. And, I think we maybe have Dr. Lombard on the line. So good. So let me kind of reintroduce Dr. Lombard because he's in private practice as a neurologist. And he uses both traditional and functional medicine approaches as he works with clients. And he's assistant clinical professor of neurology at Cornell Medical School. And honestly, he's going to be in town on September 25th to share his insights on autism and ADHD. And so if people have questions today for him, it's because we don't get this opportunity very often to have a guest like this on. And our number here today is 651-641-1071. And Dr. Lombard, welcome to the Dishing Up Nutrition.
Thank you. Thank you. It's nice. I'm glad you guys invited me. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being on.
Thank you.
You know, as a parent and also as a grandparent, you know, if my child is hurting in any way, then I'm hurting. So, and also I was a former special education teacher for about 20 years. And I know, as most people know, that parents, if they have a child with some problems, they're really lost in what to do.
Right.
And frequently they don't want to medicate because we work with these people all the time. And they don't really want to medicate, but they just can't believe that nutrition will make that much difference. So would you give us a peek into how you would guide a parent along and give us a little bit more background about how you work with people?
Well, you know, I think that every child is an individual, and that the components that go into both normal developmental behavior as well as abnormal behavior are complex. There's many, many factors, nutrition being one of them, but not the only one. Certainly there are, you know, other issues I think people need to look at. But, you know, there's clearly a one-size-does-not-fit-all approach. Because, you know, kids have very unique, different developmental issues. Some could be social issues. Some can be concentration issues, language development, perceptual problems. There's really, a laundry list of problems that each child requires a unique analysis of.
So when you sit down with a person or a family, what avenues do you kind of look at first, or is there any first that you do look at?
Well, the first thing I look at is why are they there? You know, why did the parents bring the child to, you know, a medical specialist? What is their overriding concern? Is their concern academic? Is it emotional? Is it behavioral? Is it sleep? Because sometimes, very often with children, if you really address the primary problem, such as sleep disorders, which are very common in children with ADHD and ADD especially, a lot of times just resolving that one issue can lead to a rippling effect of benefit into other domains that you would not expect to see benefit in.
So it's very interesting, Dr. Lombard, because it's so interesting because this past week there in our major paper in Minneapolis, the Star Trib, there was a major article on sleep. And Sarah Moran, who is one of the writers for the Star and Tribune, wrote this article on the problems of sleep that not only adults are having, but also children. And and then I turned on the TV the other day, and there was another story about the problems that people are having with sleep. So it just keeps coming up all the time. So when you have a child that's really having trouble sleeping, are there some things that you look at first? How do you help that family with getting that kid, you know, the 8, 9, 10 hours of sleep? I mean, I think kids need about 10 hours of sleep every night, at least, don't they?
Well, I mean, every kid's different, but certainly, you know, 8 hours at a minimum of unobstructed sleep. And one of the things that we have found quite frequently in children with behavioral problems, attention, you know, quote, attention deficit disorder, is that a significant percentage of children have sleep apnea. They have enlarged tonsils, which may be a result of allergies, which is another issue to talk about if we have time. But sometimes just improving their sleep hygiene by improving oxygenation at night. I mean, if you think about it, the brain is highly dependent upon normal oxygenation, and children with sleep apnea lose that oxygen capacity, and it manifests as irritability, daytime hyposomnolence, and difficulty concentration, and these kids can be misdiagnosed as having ADD. When in fact it's primarily a sleep disorder.
So I think that's even a new thought for most people, because most people think that people that have sleep apnea are, they weigh 300 pounds,
yep,
or, you know, they're overweight, or they're much older, or there's all those things that we have in our
yes,
thought pattern of who would be on a CPAP machine or some kind of a sleep machine to control and correct that problem.
Right.
So you're saying that a lot of kids actually have sleep apnea.
Yes, I think that I'm not sure what the percentages are, but it's something that should be routinely screened for either by a pediatrician or by a pediatric neurologist who sees children who present with behavioral disturbances that are ascribed to having ADD or ADHD. We also see a lot of children with ADD and ADHD who have other types of sleep nocturnal problems, including restless leg syndrome, and, you know, primary insomnia, night terrors, sleepwalking. I mean, there's a whole variety of various sleep problems, and I think, you know, that's a good place for parents to start looking at to see, you know, what they can do to actually improve that portion of a person's life, with unexpected beneficial effects on daytime activity.
So, Dr. Lombard, we have to take a quick break here, but, you know, I want to talk more about this when we come back. So we're going to shoot more questions at you, but right now you are listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness, an organization specializing in therapeutic nutrition for all health and conditions, including attention and concentration problems. It may surprise you that one of the main culprits causing, and this was interesting, we didn't even know we were going to talk about this, but one of the major problems is lack of sleep. And honestly, there was a nice article in the Star Tribune last Monday, "If You Don't Snooze, You Lose," by Sarah Moran, and the research points out that children, including adolescents, need at least 9 to 10 hours of sleep per night to function. You know, it seems like an easy solution, more sleep. But again, getting there is another problem. So if you have questions for Dr. Lombard today, our number here today is 651-641-1071.
Living life out Loud on FM 107.1.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. I am Anna Durhack, licensed nutritionist, and I am here with Darka Vist, also a licensed nutritionist. And Dr. Jay Lombard has joined us. He is a neurologist and expert in the treatment of autism and ADHD. And we are here to answer your questions and help you make important lifetime decisions about nutrition. Make some simple changes like drinking water and not soda, having eggs for breakfast rather than cereal, staying clear of dyes and coloring in foods. And just to mention, there are even dyes and colorings in children's multivitamins. We see that a lot. So
would that be Flintstones?
Yes. Just to mention one. So, and we find that every positive nutritional change helps to keep the brain working optimally.
So, Dr. Lombard, we were talking about sleep before we went on break, and so let's finish up that discussion a little bit.
Sure.
You know, and I'm sure if I was a parent out there and I had a kid that was only sleeping 5 or 6 hours, and actually I had a grandchild that was kind of struggling through that for a period of time, and I think the question would be from a parent is, okay, what do I do? You know, so do you have some tricks up your sleeve on how to help kids sleep better that you know, they really want to sleep more?
Right. So, I mean, you know, talking, you know, from a sort of metabolic perspective, there's been some very significant research supporting the role of melatonin, especially in autism and in pediatric bipolar children. So these kids, the classic history when the parents come in is that, you know, my son, daughter has never slept, you know, through the night. They wake up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. This is very classic for autistic kids especially, and they're just wide awake. And these kids clearly have circadian rhythm disturbances. If you measure their melatonin, and you can measure melatonin through a salivary test, which is quite accurate, you see that they have significant depression and melatonin levels compared to their age, you know, comparative cohorts. And melatonin, in my experience, has been a very benign intervention. It has very good efficacy. I think it's very safe. And it's something that I use quite frequently in this population of kids with autism and with pediatric bipolar disease to improve their sleep status. And the nice thing about it is if it doesn't improve it, you tell parents, you know, you try it for 1 or 2 nights, and if it doesn't help, then that's not the issue. The issue is something else. So you get very good, fast, real-world feedback from a very simple, benign intervention.
So what you're really saying is it is very safe, because this is parents are going to ask that question. They always, you know, we get that question from adults all the time. Is this really safe to take?
you know. It, in my mind, is very, very safe, especially in children that, you know, fit the profile and have documented low salivary melatonin levels. I don't even think in many of these children that I even measure it. I just empirically give a trial, and I think it's been, you know, beneficial more often than not.
So when you're looking at dosing on children for melatonin, what do you usually start with?
Very low doses, never more than 2 or 3 milligrams. I think 3 milligrams is the maximum amount that I use, and very often even less than that is adequate, 1 milligram.
You know, it's sort of interesting, and we usually recommend like 1 or 2 milligrams, even for adults. Mm-hmm. But I've had a client that's had a really long history of migraines, and when she came to me as a client, she was already taking. And it was working for her. She was taking 20 milligrams of melatonin a night, and it was actually the first time that she had ever been able to sleep in her life. And she was 50, and so this was getting her 6.5 hours of sleep a night, and it was working. And because before that, it was 2 or 3 hours of sleep a night. And
high-dose melatonin has actually been fairly well researched, especially in cluster headaches, which is a type. It's not really a migraine. It's actually much more severe than migraine and is very clearly related to the hypothalamus and circadian rhythm disturbances. These patients get severe headaches, usually nocturnally, and high-dose melatonin is very, very effective in this population of of patients. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me that you would hear something like that.
Well, that's great. And I think that clears up a lot of misconceptions mm-hmm. that people have about melatonin right. and the safety of it. And what an easy thing to give children, you know, if they're struggling with that sleep.
Right.
Definitely.
Dr. Lombard, I have one question about melatonin, too. This is Anna, by the way. I've heard that if you take it for too long, that your body somehow either gets used to it or doesn't work effectively. I mean, is that true or?
Well, I mean, melatonin is a hormone. So, mm-hmm. you know, there is something called feedback regulation of hormones. Okay. And that's true if a person takes thyroid or estrogen or progesterone or, you know, any hormone that the risk is that you are giving it on a continuous basis, that ultimately you repress endogenous production.
Okay.
And so I think that, you know, the no one knows, you know, when and if that happens in melatonin, but I think the good guideline is that less is more.
Okay.
That, you know, using relatively low doses that are matching the physiological secretion of melatonin. Because, again, the evidence suggests that, especially in autism and pediatric bipolar disease, that their endogenous production is already reduced. So think of it like a hypothyroidism.
Right.
Where you're giving thyroid replacement therapy, it's not much different than that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So, you know, Dr. Lombard, we have to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to talk about allergies a little bit. So you're listening to Dishing Up Nutrition. If you're joining us, we're discussing the role nutrition and key supplements play in improving attention and focus. You know, have you decided this fall is the fall to change your nutrition to feel better? So sign up for one of our Weight and Wellness series. These are two-hour classes full of life-changing information. You'll meet once a week for 6 weeks with a nutrition educator that understands your struggles, you know, like giving up pop and those processed snacks. And, you know, the thing about preparing meals already on a busy schedule and how sugar cravings can get in the way of your healthy eating. When we come back, Anna will give you a scoop on all the locations and the price. So questions today, 651-641-1071.
Living life out loud. FM 107.1.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. Joining us today is Dr. Jay Lombard, neurologist. He's lectured extensively on the neurobiology of autism and ADHD. And Dr. Lombard will actually be speaking on what it's called Breakthrough Nutritional Therapies to Prevent and Treat Autism, ADHD, and ADD, Friday night, September 25th, from 7 to 9 at the Embassy Suites, which is in Bloomington, by the Minneapolis airport. And to register, call 763-479-3343, extension 123. And it's only $10, but seating is limited. So sign up fast and save your spot.
So let me just repeat that again. It's Friday night, September 25th, and it's 7 to 9 Embassy Suites. And to sign up to register, and I would really encourage people to do it quickly because it's 763-479-3343, extension 123. And because the cost is only $10 and it's a two-hour lecture.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Lombard, we have lots of questions here. People have been emailing us questions. So let's go, you know, how do you get your pediatrician to screen your child for sleep apnea? What do you need to ask them to do? I think that came from a listener.
You need to understand what the symptoms are, especially, you know, if you observe your child either snoring or, you know, kicking a lot at night, waking up frequently, being irritable during the day, or you notice that their tonsils are quite enlarged, that means that their airway is narrowed. It really behooves the pediatrician to pay attention to a parent presenting those list of symptoms. And, you know, sometimes a parent just has to prod the pediatrician and say, look, I really think that this may be a consideration. Is there a pediatric sleep lab, nearby where we can have them evaluated?
I think that's a wonderful suggestion. Great. I mean, if the parents got nothing else out of this show, that's
great
a gem.
Info, yes.
So I have another question that one of the listeners wrote in is, what time do you take melatonin? When do you take it?
Usually an hour before bed.
An hour
usually,
before bed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the onset is about an hour. And just so people know, actually, I give it to my oldest daughter almost on a regular basis for several years now. She's 7, and she's had, you know, very severe sleep problems since infancy, really. We give her about 1 milligram at night in a sublingual lozenger, and it's just we've never seen any adverse effects from it whatsoever, and it really improves her daytime activities.
You know, it's so interesting, Dr. Lombard. People don't even know what sublingual means, and it just means you put it under their tongue, and it melts, and it goes. It's so easy for kids to take, or even for adults to take, and there's some great sublingual melatonin supplements out there. So another question, and this is going to be restless leg syndrome. Suggestions for kids with restless leg syndrome.
So again, there's a high relationship of restless leg syndrome to ADD and ADHD. And there may be some common biochemical substrates. That is that dopamine is a neurotransmitter in the brain, which is responsible for attention and focusing during the daytime, but in the evening, low dopamine is associated with involuntary sleep jerking activity where a child or an adult frequently kicks and you know, their legs are continuously moving, thrashing about at nighttime. And one of the nutritional relationships to restless leg syndrome is iron deficiency. And iron deficiency is something that also should be screened for in children both with restless leg syndrome and with ADHD. Frequently you'll find that these kids can have low iron, and iron is necessary for normal dopamine production both in the body and in the brain.
So, Dr. Lombard, are we testing low hemoglobin or are we testing low or iron stores when we're testing for these kids?
These kids usually have normal hemoglobin and hematocrits. They may have either low iron or actually low ferritin, which is a very sensitive way of determining iron stores.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And
good.
I think that's another thing. I don't know if you could repeat that again, because I don't think parents really understand that what they have to be asking for for to get the right test, because the hemoglobin is not going to show it, is it?
Only in extreme cases where a person is very severely iron deficient. That it'll result in, you know, full-blown anemia. But iron levels or ferritin, spelled F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N, are a very sensitive marker for, you know, long-term iron storage. And that's probably the best, most sensitive test to ask a pediatrician to screen for in a routine blood test.
So would you also, as an adult, when you have adult people with restless legs, would you also recommend that very same test for people with restless legs?
Yes, I would. and so often, you know, we see the drug companies really promoting the use of, you know, the medications for restless leg syndrome, which, by the way, work. They're not ineffective, but often if a person is iron deficient, that sometimes is sufficient without taking medication.
Yes, it's so interesting. You know, one of the other things that you kind of mentioned about dopamine and that it's a neurotransmitter, and we know that dopamine is the kind of the focus neurotransmitter, isn't it? And, you know, what we kind of recommend is eating, you know, we try to get kids eating more protein through the day to build their dopamine levels.
That's a good suggestion, because carbohydrates directly interfere with the reuptake of the amino acids that are involved in synthesizing dopamine, which are predominantly tyrosine and also phenylalanine. And when a person eats a high carbohydrate diet, those amino acids have less passage from the blood circulation to the brain, which ultimately means that there's less dopamine being produced. So there's clearly a benefit for high-protein diets in this as well.
Yes, I love it.
We love having you on, Dr. Lombard.
So we have to take another quick break. You're listening to Dishing Up Nutrition. I think for many people, it is a big step to connect what their child is putting in their mouth with how well they're actually attending in class. You know, check it out. You know, feed your child eggs and maybe real hash browns for breakfast. Not too many hash browns, more eggs. And then check with their teacher and see how they're feeling. Maybe the next day do Pop-Tarts and cereal and juice. Check with the teacher and see how they're doing. And I bet you're going to get a negative report on the Pop-Tarts and cereal and juice. So if you have questions today for Dr. Lombard, 651-641-1071.
Living life out loud.
Living life out loud.
FM 107.1.
Welcome back. We are so pleased you tuned in today and hope the information we are sharing will help you and your children have less of a struggle with attention and focus problems. Before break, we were kind of talking about...
It was a couple of breaks ago.
We were talking about the Weight and Wellness series, but I am teaching the one in Maple Grove.
Which is always fun then.
Always. It's on Wednesday night. And we also have a ton of other classes. We're starting one in Andover on Friday mornings. There's one in Anoka, Burnsville, Chanhassen's on Thursday night, Edina, St. Paul, Saturday mornings. Wayzata has one on Thursday nights. White Bear Lake, Woodbury is on Wednesday night. And we even have a new location in Stillwater. So for all of our listeners who are in Western Wisconsin, you can always come right on over. And just pick your location today, and you can either go to our website, weightandwellness.com, or you can call us today at 651-699-3438 to sign up. And the cost is only $225, so it's a wealth of information for a reasonable cost. And you'll also receive a nutritional manual and a cookbook of all Dar's recipes.
Well, not all mine recipes, but a lot of them.
Some of them.
So we also have two lunchtime classes, and they are in Woodbury on Monday, and that's at 11:30 to 12:30. And then we have it on Tuesday in Highland. And again, that's 11:30 to 12:30. So you can do it over lunch and learn about nutrition. And so, Dr. Lombard,
Yes, you mentioned just briefly about allergies and how do those affect kids with behavioral issues or just other type of neurology issues?
Well, this is an area that, you know, I probably should defer to some colleagues who are more specialists in allergy in children than what I do. But there clearly is a high coincidence, if you will, coincidence, not meaning coincidence, but coincidence of children with intolerance to predominantly wheat and dairy, but also, as you mentioned, you know, different food coloring and food dyes. And there's a very complex relationship between the immune system and the brain, which I think most conventional doctors have not really understood or have been willing to look at, which is really, I think, unfortunate, because the immune system and abnormalities in the immune system has very profound implications for brain function. And the more fully we understand how alterations in the immune system and elevations of pro-inflammatory cytokines and elevations of immunoglobulins disturb brain chemistry. And I think once those pathways are more clearly elucidated, I think the evidence will be quite unequivocal that allergies are a adverse event in children with developmental issues, whether it's ADHD or autism.
You know, it's kind of interesting because we do work with several children, but I think it's always nice to just kind of look at it from more of a personal level. And I think people understand that almost better because I have a granddaughter that is 7, and she was born with a gluten sensitivity, a dairy sensitivity, and actually a sensitivity to eggs. And because of the fact that we know what we're doing and realized just from her eczema and all the things that were going on and her sleep issues and all the things all those things disappeared out of her eating. And she was able to calm down. And, you know, the eczema went away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if Willow didn't have my daughter as a parent and me as a grandparent, she probably would be ADD today. Mm-hmm. I'm sure she would be. And she wouldn't be a very happy girl. And now she is just the charmer. And she is. I mean, she is just great. And that's, you know, but it's being on top of this always to know. And there is, we know that there's like over 30% of the population that now have a gluten sensitivity. Yeah. And more kids seem to have, I mean, I don't know, Dr. Lombard, have you noticed that too? That it seems like more and more children now do have these food sensitivities.
I think we're more sensitive in picking it up more now.
Maybe.
Yeah, but there's no question. I mean, and one of the things that parents should to raise a red flag about this, as you mentioned, besides skin changes like eczema, one of the things are if a child craves a particular food and eats that food almost to the extent that they're eating nothing else, that's usually a red flag that they have allergy to that particular food, because in some ways it's a paradoxical reaction that the craving of that food is sort of a warning sign of that being a potential allergy.
So, you know, can you put it in just kind of common lay terms of people, parents? You know, if a child is, say, gluten sensitive and they decide to feed them breakfast cereal in the morning that has, like, Wheaties, for instance, and they feed that child Wheaties, and of course the child likes that, and they also put some milk on it and probably some sugar, so that, again, the child's going to like those things. But what happens biochemically then to the brain for a person that has a sensitivity, though, to those products?
Well, in the case of celiac disease, one should know it's not only relevant to children but also adults. And there's a sort of a long list of neurological symptoms that can be associated with occult celiac disease, which very, very often is not ever diagnosed. I've had patients with motor neuron disease, Lou Gehrig's disease, multiple sclerosis, ataxia, which is inability to walk, and a variety of progressive neurological symptoms that once celiac disease is diagnosed, at least you have a chance to correctly address the underlying problem. So I think it's something that we probably should be routinely screening for. I mean, we screen for things like PKU, you know, and that's been, you know, because of the strong association of that enzyme defect with mental retardation, that, you know, pediatricians routinely screen for it. And because celiac disease is such a pervasive problem, and it does have neurological and systemic manifestations, and very often you don't have to have the classic GI symptoms of celiac disease with, you know, diarrhea and other gastrointestinal symptoms, that one should, I think, you know, be asking the pediatrician just to do, again, it's a routine blood test. And it could be included with the rest of the blood panel to make sure that child doesn't have celiac disease.
I think that makes a lot of good sense. And it's kind of getting on top of a lot of these things. Dr. Lombard, we have to take a quick break, but I think one of the things that we wanted, I want you to kind of share when we come back a little bit is with your presentation that's going to be on Friday night, what will you be talking about, and so that parents have an idea of what you're going to be talking about then. So when we come back, we'll be just discussing that, so we'll be back in a few minutes, or just a few seconds, and stay tuned.
Living Life Out Loud. Wow. On FM 107.1.
Welcome back. We want to thank Dr. Lombard, and we are all looking forward to his wonderful lecture on Friday night, again, September 25th. If you forgot the phone number to sign up for his presentation, it's 763-479-3334, extension 123.
And I was giving out the wrong number. So it's, again, Anna, it's 763-479-3334, extension 123. And if you forget it, you can call our office, and everybody knows that number.
651-699-3438.
So when Dr. Lombard, on Friday night, September 25th, what are you going to be talking about so parents will be right there to sign up?
Well, I guess I'm going to be talking about what we talked about today, but in more detail. I actually, have a small presentation prepared, but often I find that these sessions are more valuable as a question and answer. Mm-hmm. People get to really, pick my brain and ask any question about whether it's medication, whether it's about autism, ADHD, treatment approaches, research on the etiology. I mean, it's really my time for you guys. I'm there really to just answer questions. I have no agenda in terms of not trying to sell anything. I'm not trying to sell my practice or a supplement. I just want parents to be empowered with information that can help their children. I'm a parent of two children myself, 7 and 4, and I know that being a parent, you only want the best thing for your child, and you want unbiased truth, and that's what I'm going to be giving.
I think that's great.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's wonderful. And I can imagine that you're going to have a lot of people showing up to, because there's a lot of questions about medications, about food, about all these things. And people are really frustrated and worried about their kids, right. And rightly so,
Absolutely, yes.
I think at Nutritional Weight and Wellness, what we do nutritionally is try to help people learn how to eat right, basically. And that's, real protein, real food, real vegetables.
Yes, we can hear them.
Yes. It's great.
We love it.
You guys want to say hello really quick? Say hi.
Hi.
Thanks for listening.
That's Julie and Sophia. They're listening in on the radio show.
Oh, that's great.
I love it.
Dad did a great job this morning,
yes,
didn't he?
Yes, he did.
As always, I imagine.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you on the 25th.
Yes,
and
again, I will be there.
See you in a couple of weeks. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
You too, Dr. Lombard.
So again, for people that want to attend his lecture, it's only $10. It's 763-479-3334. And again, when if you're checking out and want a healthier eating plan, basically Anna and I work with people all the time in our offices, helping people learn how to eat better.
Yeah.
So we believe change your nutrition.
Change your life.
And change your life. Thank you for listening today.
Thank you. Let the morning time drop all its petals on me. Life, I love you. All is groovy.